It's Thursday. The skies are blue over West London. I'm Gab. He's not Jules. Jules is on assignment. He's Stuart Robson. Next best thing. We've got a packed show for you today because we'll be talking Champions League. Jules will be joining us later to talk Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern. We'll have quick hits, Chelsea, City, all that good stuff. But Robbo, we got to start. Yep. At Anfield, where there were no fewer than 19 European Cups won between these two sides. Liverpool looking to overturn that 3-1 first leg deficit from Valdebebas. Didn't work out.
It didn't work out. They didn't play at their very best, but they had chances. There's no question about that. In the, I think it was the second minute, ball played over top. It was typical Liverpool. They won the ball back in a good defensive area. The next ball was played in behind. Mane had made his run inside the fullback. He sets up Mo Salah, and Mo Salah really should score. And Courtois is going the wrong way, saves it with his foot. There was another one in the first half where Wijnaldum just chose the wrong technique. He's, I don't know, 10 yards out, just smashed through the back of the ball. He tries to side foot it and it goes over the crossbar.
It's the Milner chance as
the
well.
The Milner chance. There was lots of chances they had, but you always felt as though Real Madrid had some sort of control on the game. They used the wide areas quite a lot, the switches of play. They got Mondi going forward to support Vinicius Junior down one side. They got Valverde getting forward down the other side. And that's where they knew they could get a bit of space because they know that Mane's not going to go back. They know that Salah's not going to go back. So when they wanted to control the game, the tempo of the game, that's what they were looking to do to switch the play out to the wide areas.
Yeah, I think the script kind of unfolded the way we expected. Mm. I think if some of those early chances from Liverpool had gone in, they would have changed the game. Mm. It does feel to me like Salah and Mane, especially Salah, but really both of them, they're not the players they were a year ago. Is this just the legacy of a full season? Is it that when everything's clicking,
well,
looks better?
Yeah, I would go the other way. I would say Salah is still making the right runs. He's still creating the chances for himself and having the chances created for him. He's just not finishing them particularly well, and that was the case last night. Mane, on the other hand, I think has gone off the ball. Last season, I thought he was magnificent. Every time he made runs forward, he looked like he was going to get there. Whether he's lost a half a yard of pace through an injury or he's got a niggle in, whatever it may be, but he doesn't look as confident as he was last year, and it's not quite worked for him. But overall, I thought Salah created a chance for himself. He just didn't take them on this occasion.
I want to give some love to Real Madrid because, yep, of course, not enough people do that because there aren't enough Real Madrid fans around the world. But obviously Liverpool had a lot of injuries, but they had significant injuries and that they've been coping with all season long. I mean, we always mention Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip out, but you know what? They're used to it. They found some sort of level without them.
Yep.
Henderson out as well, but that's nothing new. But here, Zidane had to put things together with Eder Militao, who has generally, I think, been poor every time he's played, or most of the times he's played.
Well, that game against Shakhtar Donetsk earlier on in the season, he was hopeless in that game.
With, you know, Nacho, who is all right as a reserve. Going into the game, he has no Dani Carvajal, no Lucas Vasquez, who I thought did a good job filling in there. He brings Fede Valverde back. Fede Valverde's wife tweeted out a picture of his foot, which was basically one gigantic bruise. And yet, that foursome, together with, I thought, the job the midfield did, which we've been lionizing all season, rightly so, Casemiro, Modric, and Cruz, they kept it together. And I thought, while Liverpool did create those chances, it wasn't the overwhelming battering that we would have expected. And there were chances at the other end, too.
Yeah. I think Real Madrid started the game poorly for the first 10 minutes. They played into Liverpool's hands. You know, we all know that Liverpool at home are going to press the ball high up the field. They're going to play at 100 miles an hour. They're going to stick balls in behind you. They weren't ready for the first one, the Real Madrid back four. And they kept on trying to play out from the back, getting caught in midfield, and Liverpool would have another attack. But then, as I said, they started to realise where the space was. That was out wide. Toni Kroos's cross-field passes were sort of controlling the game. But the two centre-halves, I thought, were magnificent on the evening. They read danger. They showed great urgency when they had to defend balls into the box. They decided, yeah, we can sit deep. We're not going to give Liverpool space to run in behind, but they're not going to play through us because we're defending really well. We've got three midfield players, and Casemiro did a brilliant job as the holding midfield player. Two other midfield players that aren't great athletes, but will just sit in front and make sure.
They're not great athletes anymore.
Anymore.
Because Modric is 35, 36.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know,
But
I'm going to time travel back to send you 22-year-old Modric to your house and say, Robbo, he's going to visit you out in Essex and say, Robbo, say to my face, I'm not a good athlete. Let's go for a run, Robbo.
Yeah. So I think they all defended well. But I also like to give a bit of love for Benzema up front. his movement, his link-up play, his understanding of where he should be at the right time was outstanding. You know, that was as good a centre-forward hold-up play and link-up play I've seen for quite a while, because he drifted out into wide areas when the space was out there. He swapped position with Vinicius Junior on several occasions. He came deep at times, then he'd run in behind. Over the two games, he was magnificent.
What did you make of the decision to start Milner in this game?
I understood it, because I thought in the first game, when he went with Keita, and Keita didn't do the job properly.
He
had a poor game. And I think Milner was brought in to help with Alexander-Arnold down the right-hand side. So when Alexander-Arnold went forward, then he would cover in as right-back, as he often does. And he was also there to press the ball. And he did it for the first 20, 25 minutes. And then you could see that they were quite comfortable playing around him and he couldn't get to people. So I thought it was the right decision, because Thiago, when he came on, didn't really affect the game. But it didn't quite work out for Jurgen Klopp.
Because viewed from the outside, you would have thought, well, why not play Thiago from the first minute, especially if Real Madrid are going to sit deeper.
Yep.
He has the reason we bought this guy, who, and again, I go back to this, by the way, people are like, oh, 25 million, he was so good last year. Yeah, but he makes an absolute bundle, and you're not going to get resale value, so it's actually costing you quite a lot. I would have thought this is the game that's made for Thiago. This is why Thiago is there, to give you that alternative. Is he not fully fit? Did he not trust him athletically?
I don't think he trusts him athletically. I've seen a couple of games, because of the way that when he was playing for Bayern, he didn't have to go into wide areas and defend. He was very much sort of central. When he's playing in this Liverpool side, if your fullbacks are going high up the field and Fabinho's is the holding midfield player, then Thiago has to play in one of the side positions in that midfield three. So when Alexander-Arnold goes forward, who's going to be covering into those areas?
It's one of those things that you imagine with all their analytics they would have worked out. Robert, just to complete this Liverpool slot, I'm a big Jurgen Klopp fan. I think what happened was remarkable. But it seemed to me like specifically in this game, he had to make a lot of changes and he had to do a lot of tinkering. And he looked to me like somebody who, you know, as the game went on, who says, all right, this isn't working, plan A isn't working, let's move to plan B and then to plan C.
Yeah,
which I suppose is fine. It's what you have to do in that situation, right? You feel it slipping away from you. You can't impose you can't bend the opposition to your will. So you have to try to bend yourself to get an edge. That's not something we saw from Liverpool last year, or indeed when Liverpool are working the way Klopp wants them to work.
No, he made changes in the second half, because as a manager or a coach, you can't just let things drift, because everyone say, well, why didn't you make changes? So he decided he was going to make a couple of changes, and I don't think it worked for him, because they lost their shape. He put Jota on and he went to the left-hand side. Salah went from the right-hand side to centre forward. Mane went from the left to the right.
But it seems like a logical change, right? I keep Firmino on the pitch because he can create a little. I saw that through the middle, because Ole ends up going through the middle anyway, right? And I want Jota on there because he's the only guy in form in my forwards.
But sometimes it can work for you. On too many occasions, when you make so many changes, the team loses its shape. They're not quite sure where the next pass is. They can't, you know, there's no patterns of play. They then took Fabinho back into the centre-half position. They took Kabak off. Thiago came on and didn't really have an influence. Then Oxlade-Chamberlain came on and wasn't quite sure where he was playing. And they just lost, I think, their balance, and they lost their shape. And they didn't look anywhere near as threatening as they did when they still had their main 11 players on the field.
Folks who hate Liverpool, who felt that, look, I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I thought it was pretty remarkable what happened last season. But folks who say that the media suck up to Liverpool or whatever will go out and say that, you know, we got carried away last year and that we're going to be too kind if we give Klopp a pass on this season. I kind of feel like giving him a pass for the players he had. I think some of the choices that were made at club level at the top, I don't think we're great, in the sense that, and we've pointed this out before, the fact that Salah, Mane and Firmino are all roughly the same age and their contracts all expire at the same time. I think that should have been addressed before. I didn't love the Thiago Alcantara signing. I thought it was too expensive.
Jota would have been a good signing had he not got injured, because he'd scored a lot of goals.
Jota was a great signing. Oh, no question. But maybe the way you deal with that is maybe you bring in Jota and you should have ditched one of the front three. But ultimately, when I look at it, I said we never found out, because Virgil van Dijk got injured and Henderson got injured. They had all the injuries that they had, but especially most significantly, the van Dijk injury. Am I being too kind and too respectful of Klopp, or does he have to look at this and say, you know what, in spite of all the injuries, we still should have done better than to be where we are in the league,
yeah,
than to go out of the Champions League in these circumstances?
To a certain degree. But if you go back, I think he made a mistake. He watched Bayern Munich win the Champions League, and they'd done brilliantly, Liverpool, last season. He watched Bayern Munich win the Champions League, and he said, what do they do that's so good? They press high up the field. They hold a high line. They don't ever go back towards their own goal. They hold this high line. It didn't work for Liverpool. Remember, they lost 7 to Aston Villa when Van Dijk was playing, and you could see they were having problems. There was free kicks being whipped into the box. They're trying to hold a high line, and players are just running and heading them in. Players were running in behind their back four. They were just standing there holding their hand up to play offside. What made him change from what they were doing last season to what they started doing at the beginning of this season? And then, of course, he lost the players. And it's difficult to have, I think, a commentator I was with last night, Jonathan Pearce, said they've had 20 different combinations at centre-half over the season. So it's always going to be difficult to be good defensively if that's the case. So I would say Jurgen Klopp is a very good manager. What I would also say is that he loves high-pressing football, high-tempo football.
That's what he built his career on, and it's been successful.
And absolutely successful. Usually, over time, managers that play that style of football will eventually have a bad season. He had one at Borussia Dortmund.
Yep.
Where they were nearly bottom of the table halfway through the season. That's why he left. I've seen it with other managers, not as good as Jurgen Klopp, but if you go to Howard Wilkinson, who was a long ball man, a high-pressing team, all that, he won the title with Leeds and all the players loved it. Next season, they were nowhere to be seen. So it can work like that.
There is an argument. I mean, this is something we hear all the time, and it makes it a bit uncomfortable because it delves into psychology. Mm. I don't like talking about that. But that you get diminishing returns over time. Mm. I mean, you can make an argument as well. Different type of game, but also like when you sort of bang the intensity drum, Antonio Conte as well, Juventus towards the end, is that after a while you got to come up with something different or you change the players because
you're absolutely
for
right.
whatever reason you cannot keep doing that.
No.
Partly it's physical, it's mental, and it felt like Liverpool didn't do that.
Well, not so much, it wasn't so much in the home game, it was in the away game where I was doing the commentary, and I was shocked by the recovery runs of some of the Liverpool players. So the ball, there was one incident where the ball got played out to Asensio, Robertson went to close him down, the ball was played in behind Robertson, and Benzema had made a run, and then I'm watching the game and I think, where's Robertson? He didn't come back into the picture because he was jogging. He was watching the game jogging. He's a fullback. He's got to get back in there and do it. And Alexander-Arnold did exactly the same down the right-hand side. And the midfield players did it. So there was either they were tired physically and mentally, or the sort of closing down has got to them and they just couldn't do it on that occasion. Because that was the worst thing about their play in that first game. They just didn't work hard enough to win the ball back.
Looking at Real Madrid, the narrative all season has been in some ways that this is a continuation of last season in the sense that this is a team that defends well, first and foremost, that's carried by Benzema. Mm. Just talk a little bit about Benzema as a center forward, because right now most people will say there's 5 outstanding center forwards who are head and shoulders above everybody else. Lewandowski, Harry Kane, Romelu Lukaku, Erling Haaland, and Karim Benzema.
Mm.
And I'm going to get into the debate. Well, if Messi played center forward, you know, my Anthony wheel should be a bicycle. But it seems to me that out of those 5 players, the way Benzema plays, the way he's transitioned from being like an accessory to Cristiano and Gareth Bale and the players around him, to being somebody who's willing to take on all the responsibility, to make that transition in his 30s, that's pretty remarkable.
Absolutely. And in the 2 games, at times he was up front by himself. Vinicius Junior was on the left-hand side. Asensio was on the right, but going back with Robertson quite a bit and getting back into defensive positions. So to be able to receive the ball when you're up against 2 defenders and maybe a holding midfield player, to find space, to take his first touch into space so he could link up the play, to make the right runs, he made run after run in behind Robertson in the first game and did it brilliantly and timed it really well. He went out, as play was building up, he went out to the left-hand side and realised he could create a 2v1 against Alexander-Arnold with Vinicius Junior. He just made good decisions, and his first touch and his link-up play I thought was exceptional. And when the ball came in the box, he was usually making that late run to try and get in there.
If you had to assess Real Madrid now, because we often talk, again, from the outside, especially in other countries, we talk about the importance of Champions League experience, the importance of having Champions League tradition. And I say to myself, this is all kind of garbage. Mm. It's all excuses we come up with afterwards, right? Yep. But then I look at Real Madrid and I say, maybe it does matter that they've won all these titles. Maybe it does matter that Zidane's been there, done that. That, you know, the three midfielders, Courtois, Benzema, keeping them afloat all these years. But then, you know, Varane, Ramos, they're going to return. Mm. While this is an imperfect team, are they, where do they rank in terms of the four remaining semi-finalists?
Well, they have to, obviously have to be up there at the moment. I would still say Modric and Kroos, when they're dominating the game, when Real Madrid in possession and they can switch the play and they can and can play the game at their tempo, they're exceptional players still. But there was times against Liverpool in the second game where Wijnaldum just ran off of Toni Kroos and he turned and ran away from Modric. I would always worry about that. If I was Zidane, I'd look at that and say, yes, I know Casemiro's going to cover for them at times, but he can't do it all because he's covering for his centre-halves as well.
Those guys are older and they've been playing all year. Yeah. They've basically been fit all year. That's pretty remarkable
I mean, I'm not criticising them. What I'm saying is I can see it as a problem at some point if they're not in possession and the opposition start to dominate them and start to run beyond them, then that back four, whoever's playing in the back four, will be under a lot more pressure. You know, I'm not sure. I think Mondi looks a good player going forward. I'm not sure still about his defensive qualities. So that would be a worry for me. And of course, at right back, we're still seeing two or three different players play there. So Real Madrid are a very good side, but I don't think they're quite as good as Man City, and I don't think they're as good as PSG at the moment.
Although they just need to be as good as Chelsea or better than Chelsea to get to the final. And then it's 90 minutes and anything can happen. Well, what I find interesting is looking at these four teams, Real Madrid are competing for a title domestically. Paris Saint-Germain are competing for title domestically. Chelsea are in the midst of a race to finish top four, which I think is pretty critical to them and their finances. The one team that can kind of sit back are Manchester City.
But that hasn't always worked for Pep, has it?
Remember it hasn't. That's what's so interesting. Like, because it seems to me you have to get the balance right between taking your foot off the gas and making sure everybody's rested. And look, I mean, they do have some FA Cup and whatever to keep the tension up. And keeping the tension high enough that you're ready for those big semifinals.
Because that was the case when he was at Bayern, wasn't it? They'd won the title way before the semifinals, and they played so poorly. And that was against Real Madrid, wasn't it? And they were hopeless in those games. They were beaten so easily. So that's the key for Guardiola. He's got to make sure he keeps this Manchester City team still fighting on all fronts.
All right, rip roaring to April 27th, 28th, I believe, the first legs, and then the returns the following. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. It's Gab and Jules with Robbo. Obviously no Jules, but we had to have him on, Robbo.
Of course.
Understandably, because we watched, I'd say, two epic games from a neutral's perspective between Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern. Jules, as you know, I'm entirely impartial on this one. I thought they were incredibly entertaining. In the end, it was the away goals rule that made the difference. I also felt that this could have finished 7-2 on aggregate to either team. I mean, that is kind of how crazy these two games were. You'll tell us how happy you are, but was this good football, or was this just kind of like gut it out any way you can with all the absences and let the stars take over?
So first of all, I thought it was great games, both games, despite the players missing, as you said, because the intensity was there, each team playing on their strength, tactically and individually as well, on, okay, this is how we're going to trap you or try to trap you, and this is how we're going to avoid your trap and try to trap you after you try to trap us. And I thought it was brilliant. You're right, it could have been far many more goals if Keylor Navas and Manuel Neuer had not been in goal, and instead we would have had you and Robbo in goal, for example, or whoever else, to be fair, because I thought going forward that was so good. And of course, there were still mistakes made. I mean, Leroy Sané should have had a much better game in the second leg, and maybe things would have been different. But if Neymar scores all the chances he has in the second leg, it's all different. So we can all go back and look at it, and it could have been very different outcomes every single time. However, I thought in terms of technical level and tactical level and intensity, this was two of the best games we've seen this season.
Rob, I want to get you on Neymar because I think there was a sense, right, that we've almost written his story for him. Cristiano, Messi, Neymar is the heir apparent. Remember back in the day, Neymar and Pogba were the heirs apparent. Yeah. It hasn't quite worked out that way. Neymar still has, perhaps unfairly in some ways, He has the reputation of somebody who, either because he gets hurt or whatever, he doesn't quite deliver. And yet, on the big stage, what really mattered in these two games against one of the best teams in the competition, he was out of his skin.
Yeah, well, I'm one of his worst critics.
You are?
One of his biggest critics.
Just don't bring up diving and rolling around.
No, but what I saw from him over the two games was somebody who was at his most effective. He's a brilliant player who can go past people with the ball at pace. He's got a change of pace. Can he drift past defenders? He can find a pass as well. He can score goals. That's when he's being effective. That's when he wants to be a top-class player. And I've seen it on many occasions where he's doing that. On other occasions, I see where he wants to showboat on the halfway line and intimidate the opposition.
Well, sorry, you bring it down to wants, right? He's been doing this 10 years. He's had a ton of responsibility on him from a very young age and a ton of pressure. Is it really a question of wants? Does he have to be 100% physically fit? What is it really?
I think it's mentally. What does he want to achieve? And I think at times he wants to show people how good he is and how skillful he is in the wrong areas. And I played under a coach called John Cartwright. Said, never play your best hand when you don't need it. Always play your best hand right at the end. And that's what Neymar did in the games against Bayern Munich. He was brilliant in the top third of the field. He didn't have to be brilliant just on the halfway line and intimidate somebody by standing on the ball and doing 15 step-overs. He was effective. I've seen it many, many times. I saw one of the best performances I saw him play was for Brazil against England at Wembley, where I thought, this is a magnificent player. And then I saw him the week after where he wanted to showboat again. When he plays like this, he's a magical player, no question about it.
Jules, I want to get your view on this because I struggle with this. I can accept what Robbo's saying in a young player and somebody who's immature. Neymar may make bad decisions, he may be a diva or whatever. I just can't accept that somebody who's been a professional for 10 years at the highest level is like that, is going to be a diva, is going to make these poor decisions, is going to have issues with motivation. He's been through so much. Is Robbo being fair? Is it that simple?
I think you both made a really good point. I just think that maybe the maturity has come a bit later for him because of all those responsibilities he had and that pressure since a very young age. Because when he was at Barcelona, he was looked after by other more experienced players, bigger players, of course, like Messi and Suarez. And maybe when he came to Paris, he realized that you have to be more consistent. You have to be more focused. You can't behave maybe the same way that he had done all his life. And I think that took time. That took time. But when you see him the way he was against Bayern, but do you want to be like, maybe he feels like when he plays against Toulouse or Amiens or Dijon or whatever, he doesn't need to be at the same level as the one he was against Bayern Munich. And maybe Robbo is right on that point, that he doesn't choose his games, but maybe he think like, okay, there's degrees of importance in some of the games you play. You can't always be 100% focused in every game.
Jules, I'm not going to say that Cristiano and Lionel Messi play well every single game because they don't, but we've seen them have bad games. But they, especially Cristiano, certainly, but you know, in fact, both of them, both keep their level against bad opponents too. Like if Cristiano or Messi were playing against Amiens or whatever.
Let me just cut in here, Gav.
Do they just have more hunger? Are they mentally?
I'll just cut in here because Ronaldo when he first went to Manchester United, had bad games where he made poor decisions, and he was a showboater.
And then he realized
after a period of time, I've got to be more effective. I can't waste my
energy. So you're saying Neymar never went beyond that stage?
He still has those days where, you know, I've seen him, and when he frustrates me, when he stands on the ball and do 15 step-overs, go nowhere, and the defender just stands off of him, and he's trying to showboat, he's trying to intimidate the opponent, trying to show how clever he is. When he's just being effective, and he's doing the right things at the right time, and trying to be as good as he possibly can be, he's a great player. There's no question about it.
I'm really interested in this. Jules, you heard what Robbo said. Again, having been around professional athletes for, I don't want to date myself, but for many, many decades, so many people, I remember what Arsene Wenger said to me, that, you know, these people, even at a young age, have to overcome, make so many sacrifices, overcome so much stuff, that with very few exceptions, everybody's mentally tough. And while they can be derailed, when they reach their late 20s or mid to late 20s, if you're a professional footballer, you develop that professional mindset. So I want to ask you again about Neymar. Is his hunger different from that of Cristiano and Messi at the highest level? But, I mean, you can go further down. I mean, there's ordinary players who are just as hungry as well. Just they're just not as good.
Yeah, I just don't think he has the same sort of obsession with results and performances maybe than Messi and Ronaldo, especially Ronaldo, but maybe even of Lewandowski. I mean, strikers are very different because the goal is such an obsession for them that that's what they live for. And he's obviously not a striker, so it's a bit different. But still, maybe mentally, we're all different. Players are also different. You can't always have that same hunger and obsession than some have. And maybe he doesn't have that. Maybe he sees football a bit differently, in a very Brazilian way of like, this is party time, this is, you know, we're here to entertain more than maybe being the clinical, super efficient guy who's going to always be at the level that we saw him against Bayern, and maybe also in Ligue 1.
You're throwing out stereotypes about Brazilians here, because then, look, Dunga and Thiago Silva are just as Brazilian as Neymar is, okay?
Yeah, but they're not number 10s.
It's true. Touché.
Maybe there's a sense of, you know, this is the kind of football that I play. And yeah, sometimes it's a bit showboating, or sometimes it's a bit too much in what he does. Sometimes he's very efficient, as we saw against Bayern, where, I mean, the triple step over when he had that shot with his left foot that Neuer saved on Lucas Hernandez, I thought it was. He's just like, okay, who does that? Even the Ronaldo of the Cristiano of Manchester United didn't have that kind of efficiency with all the step overs and things. So, but maybe you also think that in Ligue 1 sometimes it might be too easy. Maybe he doesn't always fancy it. And maybe that's part of where the problem is, but also part of his own personality.
Danielson, of course, had a lot of step overs, and he was a model of consistency in production. I want to just sticking with Paris Saint-Germain, then we'll get to Bayern in a minute. So many injuries, and I want to go back, and Bayern had a whole raft of them. We can go through them too. But just, I'm struck by Pochettino. How do you prepare this team, right? When, and Jules, jump in, because I'm sure I'm going to forget somebody, right? You have Florenzi and Verratti, who are on the bench, but, you know, they just recovered from COVID. They're obviously not in any condition to start. You have Marquinhos out. Danilo's forced to play center back. There's no Icardi. And yet, it feels like everybody else steps up. You know, remember Draxler had become a punchline. Di Maria, I thought he was overshadowed by Neymar, but I thought he had a monster game as well. How does this happen? Is it just the stage and like ordinary players end up stepping up? Even Mitchell Backer, who Jules loves mocking, I mean, he did his part.
I mean, they're still very good players. They're not as good as some of the players that you mentioned that were out of the side. But Pochettino did a good job in organising the team to make them efficient. But also he knew where Bayern, and I think Jules alluded to it, he found out, everybody knows that Bayern's high line can cause them problems. If they do it well and they press the ball high up the field, they can stop the opposition playing. But when you've got Neymar drifting around and going to create overloads on certain areas of the pitch, and you've got Mbappe making diagonal runs from outside to in and then doing the opposite and breaking the offside line, there was every chance that PSG could break Bayern down. And Bayern's pressing game higher up the field wasn't as good as it was last year. And that's why they're being caught out. And I thought Pochettino got his tactics right. The players did very well in carrying out those tactics. And I thought the front two in Mbappe and Neymar were excellent.
All right, let's play revisionist history here for a second there, because I take your point. There's always the threat of Paris Saint-Germain on the counter when you press them high, and obviously that's how Bayern had played all year. Was this a game where maybe Bayern said, look, we need to win by two goals. Let's maybe be a little bit more patient. Let's think let's think set piece. Let's think, you know, there's no Marquinhos at the back. Let's think something like that. And maybe instead of pressing them so high, maybe let's press them once they get to the midfield so that we don't leave our defensive line exposed like that.
But the defensive line, doesn't matter what, if you see all the chances, most of the chances came with balls played in behind, and the recovery runs of the Bayern players wasn't particularly good. How many times did you see Mbappe running free, Neymar running free, other players running free?
No, I know, but it's easier to catch Mbappe over 10 metres than it is to catch him over 30 metres, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, I'm just throwing this out, second guessing.
But Bayern were always going to play a high line.
No, but I'm saying, Jules, Jules, what's your take on this? Did Flick afterwards sit there and say, ah, yeah, but what if I had just sat a little bit? What if we had changed for this game? What if I'd given Pochettino a different look where it would have been harder for them to counterattack us? Or is that just kind of pointless second guessing?
I thought Flick missed a trick, and there's no play on words there on the first leg, though, because second leg, you 3-1 down, I think you really have to go for it. If you're patient and the tempo of the game slows down, because that would have played in PSG's hands, I don't think that would have been good for Bayern at all. I thought it was in the first leg, where maybe they should have been a bit more patient. Maybe they should have said, okay, you know what? You can have a bit of the ball more than us, and then we see. But instead, they conceded so early that then they felt, okay, let's go for it. But that first goal in the first leg was crazy goal. They were all over the place defensively. Their back line was just all over the place. And then you concede that goal with a Neuer's mistake, and then you're suddenly against it. And then you're chasing the game. PSG have never been out in this tie, which I find incredible. They've never been behind. They've never been out. From the third minute on, the first leg, they've been always qualified. They've always been through. And I just thought, if you're Bayern, and maybe you were thinking about having a different take on this game or tactics to this game, that messed you up. But certainly, I thought in that first leg, second leg, they have to go for it anyway with the players that they had left. But the first leg, maybe that's where they missed a trick.
All right, let's turn to Bayern for a second. There's an excellent column up on the website.
By yourself?
By me, funnily enough.
Of course. Brilliant article, obviously.
Great reads.
And look, this column could have been written regardless of whether Bayern had advanced or not. And the point is that there's major surgery to be done here. Bild and other outlets are already reporting that Hansi Flick is going to leave to take over the Germany job. Go back to the German FA to replace Jogi Löw after the Euros. They attribute some of it to tension internally with Hasan Salihamidzic, the sporting director. Some of that is to do with, obviously, the squad building. Remember, they brought in all those players at the very end of the transfer window in September when he's like, guys, I need more live bodies. Issues with Boateng's contract. Here's the thing. And of course, they've initially been linked with Julian Nagelsmann, because that's what happens in Germany. Yeah. Bayern get linked with, you know, the smartest guy out there. But here's the thing. If you're a new coach and you're going to move to Bayern, one of your questions is going to be, all right, what will the recruitment look like? Because, I mean, by September of next year, Lewandowski is going to be 33.
Yeah.
Müller is going to be 32. Neuer is going to be 35. Alaba is leaving. Boateng is leaving. You have all these guys who, you know, Tolisso and whatever, who are always injured. You're going to need to add bodies. Now, Dayot Upamecano is coming in, which is going to help, but you still need to have a plan for the next 2 years. You're going to have to somehow replace these people. So it comes down to how much faith you have in these players. And I want to get Jules first and then you, Robbo. You look at Bayern's top 10 most expensive signings in history, and either because they got injured or because they were just bad, I don't think any of them, other than possibly Vidal and Hummels, even though Hummels neither lasted more than 3 years, I don't think any of them were good. Should you have faith? Because where Bayern has been successful is with homegrown players or guys that they buy for not much money as youngsters, like Kimmich and Alphonso Davies and guys like that, Alaba, right?
Lucas Hernandez cost them a lot of money, and I thought he was terrific in that second leg against PSG, against Kylian Mbappe.
Fine. He's also been injured most of the time that he was here. He's been injured most of his career, in fact.
Okay, but Alaba is leaving. Move Lucas Hernandez central with Upamecano. Pavard right back if you want. Let's hope that Alphonso Davies are left back, because this is not Alphonso who's playing. That must be his twin brother, because I don't know where the Alphonso has gone, but this is not the Alphonso that we saw last season in the second half of the season. But if you know, I think Lucas Hernandez has potential to be a really, really good player for
Bayern
Munich.
He's 25 years old, Jules. Like, at some point, you move beyond. But I'm just talking about buying things at the right price and having these people stay fit and productive for you. Whether it's bad luck or whatever, it just hasn't happened for Bayern.
No, but you're right. I don't think Salihamidzic is a very good sporting director anyway. And there's certainly a lot of players that we could look at that they bought in the last 5 years who were not either the right fit for Bayern or ended up not being good enough for that team anyway. And, but not everybody can play for Bayern. Once again, we go back to mentality and personality and talent, etc. Not everybody is good enough for Bayern. But is it surprising, Gab, when you've got such a almost like a civil war within the club? And I'm surprised that they had so much success, to be fair, in the last 10 years, considering how much Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß hate each other and are still both running this club where they've been tensions forever, and yet they still manage somehow to be so successful. And yet what happens this season, for me, is not a surprise. Same with the problems with recruitment, same with the problems with, you know, with the FC Hollywood and everything we've seen at the club, because it starts right at the top between Rummenigge and Hoeneß. And if you're Nagelsmann and Rummenigge or Hoeneß says, hey, come over, you know, we have the biggest clubs, we're this, we're that, surely you think twice, because it's going in a club that, you know, even if at some point Oliver Kahn is going to take over and maybe things are going to be a bit smoother and not as tense, but you know that with Bayern, this always happens anyway. So I think well done for the success, but I thought that was always going to come anyway.
Robert, the new manager is going to be their fifth manager in 4 years.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, it's going to be,
and they've been, and they've won plenty of trophies period.
Yeah,
but I'm all.
And we're only, last year they were the best team in Europe by quite a way, and probably at the start of this season they were.
But they could have been the best team in Europe this year too. They could have easily won. I mean, we said before that they could have won this tie. They could win the Champions League. They're 5 points clear domestically. They'll probably win the Bundesliga as well. But I'm wondering, the last couple of years, is their success simply down to superhuman performances from Müller, Lewandowski, Neuer, one or two others? And the fact that, you know, there is this legacy of what Pep Guardiola bought in those 3 years. When, you know, Flick came back, he said, no, let's go back to pressing high and whatever, and let's do it this way, the way Pep taught us, and it was fine.
There's lots of good things that have gone on. I still think there'll be a very good side next year under a new manager with lots of decent players as well. The thing that's lost them in the Champions League this year is because, and I saw it right from the start of the season, they played even higher this season. And they had players that didn't seem to understand it or weren't comfortable with it. Süle wasn't comfortable with playing a high line. The other defenders were just...
But he enjoyed playing right back too.
Yeah.
But he had no choice.
And that's been their main problem. They've still played some great offensive football. They still look a really good side. But if you play a high line when there's no pressure on the ball and you stick to it religiously, you're going to have problems every so often. And that's what they've done. They've won most of their games, but every so often against a side like PSG, who have got good attacking players who can open them up, they've caused them a problem, and that's why they haven't won the Champions League this year.
Yeah, this is something to watch, and I think the main lesson is we in the media were guilty of this. Somebody wins, and then we go and we say they're absolute geniuses, they do everything right. I make the same case about Borussia Dortmund nearly every week, as Jules knows.
Mind you, what I would say about Jules saying about Hoeneß and Rummenigge not liking each other and it can't work. Look at you two. It still works, doesn't it?
There you go. Isn't he sweet?
Oh, it's so sweet. But we love each other with Gab. And like Rummenigge and Hoeneß, though.
All right, but Jules, before we let you go, two quick things which are very, very important from a footballing perspective. Number one, you got your hair cut, as did I.
Don't even say anything about mine, will you?
Yeah, no, we don't need to go there. But all right, Robert, who do you think spent more on his haircut, me or Jules?
Well, he's got a bit more. Oh, I don't know. Who's got a bit more hair? I think Jules is losing. I would say probably you spent more money on your haircut because you're in London.
Jules
is travelling around. He anywhere will do.
I spent £17. What did you spend?
£16.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was right.
All right. See? Yeah. I guess I'm the big spender.
Mind you had the dye as well, didn't you?
Thank you. So kind. Final point. for those who missed this, and I will be putting out social media, Jules decided to at the Etihad last night. Jules decided to go Anfield last night. Jules decided to do that thing where he juggles the ball behind the goal and then hits it just so, with just the right amount of spin, where it goes over the goal and then spins back into the goal, right? He tweeted it out. I retweeted it. It's on social media. Check it out. Robert, how hard is it really to do that?
Well, I would say from where he was, it's virtually impossible.
It's virtually impossible. We've seen people do it.
I'm not sure from that distance. And he did well to keep it up for three or four goes. And then outside of the boot, I think it was impossible. Yeah. He tried to use the slope of the pitch just off the byline to just try and bend it round. But no, if he'd have got that in, that would have been an absolute miracle. And it showed just how good a footballer he is.
Jules, I thought that was really impressive. The juggling, frankly, I think Robbo came of age at a time when English footballers didn't do much juggling or individual ball.
He wasn't in his football kit. He was in normal clothes.
You were wearing trainers, right?
I had one hand in my coat as well, you know.
All right, but still, what impressed me was the finish. But there you go. You get Robbo's critique of Jules' moment at Anfield.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Enough Jules. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Oh, you didn't quite do it as well as Jules, but you came close. Well
came
done.
Close, yeah.
Manchester City come from behind to beat Dortmund 2-1. Robbo, how did they look to you over the two legs? Closer than you expected?
Yes, much closer. They didn't play as well as I expected. I thought they kept the ball for the sake of keeping the ball at times. There wasn't quite enough penetration.
That'll happen when you don't play a centre forward and you play Bernardo Silva up front.
And then you had balls played in behind, which caused them one or two problems as well for the goal. I thought Haaland's pace in behind Stones was going to cause them a problem. But I saw them perform against Everton in the FA Cup. It was a similar sort of performance, but they're still a very good team.
The Emre Can penalty.
Yes, penalty. Absolutely. Right. Now, this is the eighth time Pep has reached the semi-final of the Champions League, but the first time he's done it with City. Gab, he had some interesting things to say at the end of this one, didn't he?
Yeah, he was speaking to Sky Italia, and they asked him, you've won Pep's teams, you've won this, you've won that. And he's like, look, stop saying Pep's team. I'm not playing. I just go and give them instructions. Ultimately, the difference tonight was the quality. He says, we have really good players who are in the right positions. It's not my tactics. My tactics might get them in those positions, but it's their quality that makes a difference. And I don't know. I thought that was pretty humble.
Yeah, humble and right.
We saw two exceptional performances from young English midfielders in that tie. Jude Bellingham, who was outstanding the first leg too, and Phil Foden. Robbo, who has the brighter future?
I'm going to go with Bellingham because when I think of a midfield player, I know Foden plays higher up the field. When I think of any sort of player, I like someone that can do both sides of the job. And when I look at Jude Bellingham, I think he can run with the ball, he can see a pass, but he can also get around the pitch and defend, and he wants to defend as well. That's why I think he will be a top-class midfield player for many, many years.
Ooh, so just for the benefit of our
Foden's a very good player.
No. Okay, that's fine. I'm sure that, I think they should both be in the starting 11.
Yeah.
But is Bellingham enough to break up the vaunted Declan Rice-Calvin Phillips partnership?
He is good enough. Whether he will be, Southgate sees it that way, I'm not sure. Now, Chelsea are also through, despite their 1-0 home defeat to Porto. Gab, they always looked in control, didn't they?
Yeah, look, there's a maturity to this. You know, when we have this image of Thomas Tuchel, German managers, counter-pressing, rule-breaking, heavy metal football, blah, blah, blah. He can do all that. That's not what he's serving up at Chelsea.
No.
He's showing a kind of mature performance where they don't dazzle you going forward. In fact, I think he still has issues, serious issues,
Absolutely.
In figuring out who should be playing in that front three with Mason Mount. But they concede almost nothing. It doesn't matter who plays. They're very well set up. This is a mature team, and they could spring a few surprises. Speaking of that game, I need your technical analysis of Taremi's late overhead kick.
Well, first of all, he judges the flight of the ball. And the key thing is, when you're going to hit the ball that high, you've got to get your head below the level of the ball. And that's exactly what he did. So he can get his foot high enough. He hits the top half of the ball. It's a great technical goal. And it's a brilliant bit of skill. But it's the judging the flight of the ball and having the athleticism to get your top half of your body down and that leg high.
Yeah, thinking back to this, and maybe I'm influenced by the goal, I wonder if maybe Sergio Conceição's Porto didn't show Chelsea a little too much respect in that second leg.
Now, the Financial Times reports that Manchester United and AC Milan are leading the charge by some clubs to torpedo the new Champions League agreement, and there's no guarantee that they reach a deal by next week. Gab, what's this all about?
Well, on Friday, the European Clubs Association meet, and they'll have to decide their final stance on this. So they've agreed the expanded format and the Swiss model and all this stuff. The argument is over the company that's going to control the commercial rights of the Champions League, whether it should be a 50-50 split or a 51-49 split in UEFA's favor, whether the club should have more of a say. This is basically just greed and money from the usual suspects. Real Madrid are in the mix there as well. The interesting thing is Andrea Agnelli, who is the head of the European Clubs Association, Juventus president, he had assured Ceferin that, no, don't worry, everybody's in line. Apparently, it looks like they're not in line. This could just be a negotiating ploy, but stay tuned, because on Monday, we'll know which way this one goes. Real Madrid's team bus had a window smashed on the way to Anfield to play Liverpool. Robbo, I thought those days were behind us.
Well, you'd hope they would be behind us, but we saw when Manchester City went to Anfield a couple of seasons ago, and the fans, when they were allowed inside the stadium, thought that it got to Manchester City by upsetting the apple cart and having a go at the bus and all the noise that was going on around, and they obviously thought they might get to the Real Madrid players. Didn't work for them, did it?
Yeah, this is ugly and unnecessary, and I don't think reflects what Liverpool's all about.
Gab, not a good week for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and I was doing the game last weekend when he was sent off.
Do you think? So basically on Saturday he gets sent off. On Sunday he goes out to lunch with his mates, although apparently it was a work meeting. Not that that should make a difference, because Milan is under a red zone lockdown, which means you're not allowed to do that. He gets photographed. He could be facing sanction for that. And on top of that, now it emerged, Aftenposten in Sweden, the newspaper, revealing that not only did he serve as a testimonial for a bookmaker, they claim that his company is also a shareholder in this bookmaker, which would be violation of rules. Theoretically, he risks a three-year ban from football. I don't know, and we need to wait till we see what the facts are there. But no, not a good week. He was hoping to get his new deal sorted out, and it looks like he's going to have to wait. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says Jesse Lingard has a future at Manchester United. So, Robbo, if that's the case, why didn't he play him more when he was there?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, because when he first took over, I think he was one of their key players for their counter-attacking game. And then the fans got onto him a little bit. He didn't play quite so well, and then he left him out of the team almost completely. Jesse Lingard is still a very good footballer, as he's proven at West Ham, and I think it would be the best thing for him to go to West Ham, because I don't think the fans will ever take to him again.
Yeah, I think we get a little carried away with this what Solskjaer's supposed to say. No, he has no future here. I never want to see him again. Yeah. But, I'm happy for Lingard that he shows he's productive.
Slavia Prague defender Ondrej Kudela has been banned for 10 games by UEFA after racially abusing Rangers Glenn Kamara. Gab, your thoughts?
Yeah, so a couple of things. We don't know all the details in this. UEFA will be publishing their written reasons, how they got to the 10 games. Kudela, one thing to remember, Kudela's 34. A 10-game European ban means that we will likely never see this guy ever again. People will say, well, that's not enough to stamp out racism. How long is enough? You want to ban him for 100 games? It all depends on how much evidence they found, because ultimately he covered his mouth when he allegedly said this. There were some witnesses. We don't know who those witnesses are. We don't know the strength of that. What I don't have an issue with is Kamara also getting a 3-match ban, because that happened later. You still can't assault another person, no matter what happens.
Absolutely.
It's not a question of self-defense. So hopefully, though, 10-match ban, I think, is a big deterrent. Now let's also have education. Now let's make sure people feel empowered to come out and report it when it happens. Bernd Leno has revealed that he has not yet had talks with Arsenal about extending his contract, which expires in 2023. Are Arsenal right in biding their time?
I would say so. I'm not being convinced by him as a goalkeeper. He's a decent goalkeeper, but I'm not so sure he's a goalkeeper that you want to sign up for the next 3 or 4 years again. So, I think they're absolutely right just to be biding their time.
I'm all for locking up players early, but when it comes to Arsenal, and beyond the fact that you'd rather probably go and figure out what you want to do with Lacazette, I don't think people are queuing up to take Leno away. Sign this guy up in 18 months or 2 years. You're not going to, you know, it's not like Leno's going to do better than Arsenal right now, frankly.
No, he's not going to go to the Bundesliga and earn more money there.
No, he's not going to replace Manuel Neuer. No. You know, like, chill out.
The Daily Mail, I know you like the Daily Mail, reports that the Saudi leader, Mohammed bin Salman, lobbied British Prime Minister Boris Johnson over the sale of Newcastle. Gab, are you okay with this?
I'm okay. Look, he can do whatever he likes. I mean, the whole issue with the sale of Newcastle United to the public investment fund of, which is the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia, is that the Premier League sat on it for a very long time. They didn't come up with a decision. And so eventually these people pulled out. Newcastle fans are very angry about it. There's human rights implications as well. I wish the Premier League would have, you know, grabbed their attributes and said, hey, we don't want this because of human rights, because of whatever, or otherwise say, we do want this or this. Like, to find out what you're about, rather than just slow rolling them forever. But in terms of this guy lobbying, like, it's the role of politicians to lobby on behalf of businesses in their country all the time.
Yeah.
And they do this continuously. Boris Johnson, I would presume, when he goes and talks to other countries and lobbies on behalf of whatever British aerospace or whatever things you make here, he's doing his job, and sometimes, you know, it might move into unpleasant areas, but that's because Saudi Arabia is what it is, you know? So, yeah, I have no issue with this. I'd love more clarity on it. Personally, and I've said this all along, and this doesn't just apply to them, it applies to City, it applies to Paris Saint-Germain. I don't think a sovereign wealth fund should own a football club. I'm okay with an individual doing it, but a sovereign wealth fund's first loyalty has to be to that country, not to
the club.
Not to a club. So that's my main reasoning there. Robbo, it's the 32nd anniversary of the Hillsborough tragedy in which 96 people lost their lives. Do you remember where you were that day?
I do. Funnily enough, I was injured. I was playing for West Ham at the time, but I was injured and was in the players' room when it came on the TV.
Is this at the training ground? Or?
No, this was at the main stadium. So it was on a Saturday. For some reason, West Ham must have been playing at a different time. You just couldn't believe what you were seeing. And everybody just stared at the pictures and was mortified. It was obviously a horrible occasion. But we obviously would then learn more about it as time went on. But that's where I was at the time.
Yeah, it's. I mean, all you can do is go and you know, remember how far we've come and how vigilant I think everybody needs to be, especially given what we've learned afterwards about the cover-up and a lot of the things that happened. And
what was eerie was playing at Hillsborough against Sheffield Wednesday in later years when, obviously, they never used that terrace after that. So it was always empty.
No. 32 years ago today.
Well, Napoli won the Coppa Italia last year. Rino Gattuso has got them back into the top four, yet it looks certain he'll be gone in the summer. Gab, can you explain that?
No, basically, Rino Gattuso and the Napoli president, Aurelio De Laurentiis, have been sniping at each other all season long.
Doesn't he do that with most of his managers, though?
He does, and it's getting to the point, I mean, it has gotten to the point where it's become ridiculous. I've been with Gattuso, with Ancelotti before him, towards the end of Sarri's regime as well, and it's frankly counterproductive. Now, if you want to go back and make the point, and then this was one of the big sticking issues. And Gattuso has said, look, if we don't have money to spend on a team because of the crisis, pandemic, or whatever, you come out and say it. Don't make me say it, you know, because it's not my call. It obviously counts. I think that's fair from Gattuso.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And look, I don't, you know, De Laurentiis has been sniping and pointing out, oh, look, you know, it's why Gattuso ultimately left Milan as well. No, the reason Gattuso left Milan, just to clear this up. He wasn't fired by Milan. Milan went to him and Gattuso said, what do you need? Gattuso said, we need these three caliber signings, experienced players. And Milan said, we can't afford them. We're going to have to go with younger players. And so Gattuso quit. Mm. That's what happened. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
What's happening here is you're painting him as a bad guy and whatever. He's had to deal with injuries. Osimhen out for most of the season. Mertens was out for a long time. He's dealt with so much crap. And yet he's right there, thereabouts. Mm. I think Gattuso's shown this year.
And in recent weeks, they've been excellent, haven't they?
They've been very, very good. Obviously, they lost against Juve, but I think he deserves a ton of credit. Mm. Not a huge fan of his football necessarily.
No.
But what he's done this year is special. Absolutely. Yeah. Juventus have been linked with Milan's other big free agent to be Gigio Donnarumma, who of course is out of contract in June. Robbo, you're not Mino Raiola, and you look nothing like him. What would you advise him to do? Would you say, like, if Juve offer a little more money, would you go to Juve?
When you're a goalkeeper, I don't think it matters quite so much. You haven't got to fit the style of play. I think he's a great goalkeeper. My one worry about him is with the ball at his feet. Would he be asked to do more passing out from the back at Juventus than he does at...
Under Pirlo,
than mm-hmm. he does at Milan? Well, it might not be Pirlo, might it? So we don't really know. But I would say at the moment, he's a great goalkeeper. He's doing very well. He's playing for a good side, not a great side. I would stay there for a couple more years.
Yeah, this contract renewal is curious because Mino Raiola, of course, represents Donnarumma and also represents the aforementioned Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Mm. So you wonder, is he going to do a package deal or whatever? Look, I think it's really cool. Gigio Donnarumma has already played a bazillion games for Milan, and he's still really young. I think he's going to have his opportunities later in his career. He's already on an enormous contract. He's going to sign a bigger contract. If he puts in some kind of release clause, which I'm sure Mino's going to try to ask for, fine, so be it. But for me, I want to believe that you're not just going to walk out and go join another club at this stage. And maybe I'm being naive, but I don't think it would be.
No, I don't think it would be right for him. Yeah, Juventus obviously have won things and more than Milan have in recent times, but Milan's not a bad club, is it?
No.
Now, Adi Hütte has done I can never say this word. Has done a great job at Eintracht Frankfurt. So why is he leaving to join Borussia Mönchengladbach? And why are we finding out now?
So in some ways, it's better that we're finding out now when the gap between Gladbach and Frankfurt is big enough that it's not going to be a factor, unlike the Marco Rose situation.
Yep.
But he's going to be replacing Marco Rose, who, of course, went from Gladbach, who's going to be joining Borussia Dortmund. And by the way, that announcement ended up screwing up the season both for Dortmund and for Gladbach. Hopefully, it's not going to happen like this for Frankfurt, and they're still finishing in the top four. Adi, who's... It's not surprised he goes by Adi rather than his real name, which, of course, is Adolf. But that's an issue with his parents. I think he's done a really good job. He's done a really good job for several years, even as players came and went. Obviously, got a big lift when Jovic came back. But the one thing is to do with release clauses that they have in Germany. And there they think, it's normal that somebody pays a release clause and during the season, and this way we have time to plan. But it can also be hugely, hugely destabilizing to your club. I just don't understand why they can't keep this under wraps.
It often happens with players as well, doesn't it? In Germany, players know they're going to go to another club halfway through the season almost.
Yeah, it's fine, but I think with managers they should just treat this differently.
Yeah.
You have 1 week at the end of the season where this is when the release clause is active.
Yep.
And otherwise, boom. Otherwise, you've got to come and negotiate with us or Adi. You need to resign if you want to go somewhere else. Mm. And, we'll negotiate that. But whatever. Seems silly to me. Lucas Torreira has had a tough time on loan at Atletico Madrid. He says he wants to go on loan to Boca Juniors. Mm. Well, who wouldn't? And that Boca should work something out with Arsenal. Robbo, leaving aside the benefits of the... I'm not going to ask you the impact he would have on Boca's midfield, but... What's gone wrong with this guy? Because he was so good at Sampdoria. He was good with Uruguay. I thought he was very good, in parts in his first season at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Why have the wheels come off?
When he was playing for Sampdoria, when he was playing for Uruguay, when he was playing for Arsenal, his confidence must have been sky high. He's on an upward curve all the time. And when somebody suddenly drops you from the team and puts other people in there, that has a massive effect on your confidence and your ability to go and play. And that, I think, is what's happened to Lucas Torreira. He's gone to Atletico Madrid to go and play, and they haven't played him there either. So suddenly he's asking himself questions. Am I not quite good enough? Why have Arsenal, when I look at Arsenal's midfield, why can I not get in that side? Why can I not get in Atletico Madrid's side? So he's starting to ask himself questions, and that's when your confidence starts dipping so much that he can't then play to the top of his ability.
It's odd because when Arteta came, I saw he's going to be the first name on the team sheet because he's smart, he's aggressive, he's a really good passer of the ball, he's very tidy. We presumed Arteta was going to want wanting to play some sort of Pep style.
But I think also he didn't play him in quite the right position. You know, when he played for Sampdoria, he was one of two central midfield players. Quite often at Arsenal, he had to play on the right-hand side of a three. So he ended up going into wide areas again, which is not where he wants to be playing. He wants to be... If you're playing with two holding midfield players or two central midfield players that do both sides of the game, he'd be an ideal player.
Yeah, what is that when he arrived? Arteta, Xhaka, and then... Ceballos or whatever you want, like in front, right? And I thought, boom, you're sorted. It's just an odd one to me.
Now, the authorities in Italy have confirmed that Rome's Stadio Olimpico will be allowed to have up to 25% capacity for the opening game of the Euros. Gab, why is this so important?
It's important because that was one of the requirements laid out by UEFA to the 12 host nations. If you remember, 8 were confirmed. Now Rome becomes the 9th one. There's different levels. I think in Budapest they said, no, we're going to be operating at 100% capacity. Yep. All right, good luck with that. In Wembley, I think it's going to be, they've committed to 25% for now. They hope to raise it depending how the pandemic goes. It's good news. Obviously, there was another wave in Rome, or in Italy in general. Now it seems to be start coming down. Like, all that you ask is that you put safety first and foremost. If the day before they have to say, no, we got to shut it down, at least you still play there.
Will you be in Rome for that game?
I don't know yet. I hope so. I did get my first jab on Monday. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to. But look, like most things, as much as we love football, we make our money off it. I think we all agree, health first. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has changed the tarpaulins that cover up the empty seats at Old Trafford from red to black, because he says players complained that they couldn't see each other on the pitch. Robbo?
I suppose it could happen, but I mean, it's highly unlikely.
They only realize this 12 months later?
I'm sure you can see the players. It's a strange one, I would say. Phil Foden is reportedly angry that the social media company that runs his Twitter account appeared to call out Kylian Mbappe after their win over PSG. Gab, was it that bad?
I forget exactly what it says, but basically it was like a tweet that was sent to Kylian Mbappe. And because so many people follow both Foden and Mbappe, a lot of people saw it. And it was something like, are you ready or whatever? I don't know. Like, I always wondered, the story's in the headline the next day, right? That his agent's upset or Foden's upset. And I was like, dude, you just celebrated a win. You sort of tremendous thing is your first priority to go and send a message to the media via your agent about your social media team. I think this is totally fine. I have no problem with it. There's no malice in it. I'll hazard a guess that Kylian Mbappe doesn't care.
I'm sure he doesn't.
Let's just move on. Let's go and have a wider debate like the one Gary Neville presented about the fact that you hire a social media team as well. You know, let's save that for a different time because I have no interest in it. Right, that brings us to an end, but I'll be back on Monday with Jules. Robbo, you won't be, but hopefully we'll have you as a guest soon. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.